This is an extract from the Nature podcast. For the full show, go to nature.com/nature/podcast.
These days, it's hard to escape the word interdisciplinary. While most modern researchers don't have quite the variety of interests as certain famous Victorian polymaths, there's certainly more collaboration happening between different scientific subject areas. But it's not just collaborations between scientific disciplines that are being explored. This week in Nature, we've got an essay in our Books and Arts section looking at what researchers can learn from artists and performers, and vice versa. One of the essay's co-authors is Roger Kneebone, a surgeon and general practitioner by training, now Professor of Surgical Education and Engagement Science at Imperial College London. Roger dropped by the studio along with Will Houston, a magician who has a PhD in Victorian magic literature. The two of them chatted about what the worlds of medicine and science can learn from performance, magic, and even cooking. Roger began by talking about the performance of a medical consultation.
I've been in the world of medicine ever since I qualified in 1977. But as I became more experienced, I came to see the consultation itself as a kind of performance. And that's where, when I met some magicians a while ago, a penny dropped with me that there was an awful lot of stuff that I could learn from other expert performers who deal, in this case, with a very small audience. If I thought of myself as a performer, as a doctor, and Will, I know that you do a lot of work with very small audiences.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most common places for someone to perform magic, I suppose, is in a close-up setting, working with two or three people at a time, showing them card tricks, coin tricks, and that sort of thing. And in those settings, people don't necessarily know what you're doing. Are you going to do something that's fun for them? Are you some sort of con man? Are you somebody who's going to make fun of them? They don't really know. So those same sort of interpersonal dynamics, I guess, come into play a little.
Because you get those in the consulting room as well. I mean, you know, people come and see you and they've never met and they're often very anxious. The skills, I think, of making a connection with somebody and then moving the conversation forward. One of the things that struck me when I first saw you work is the way that you are very skillful in establishing a connection while making it seem completely natural and effortless. But I know from my own experience that making things seem natural and effortless takes a lot of effort.
Yeah, absolutely. So you don't want somebody to feel, I think, that they're in an incredibly contrived and peculiar situation, or that you're there just sort of blindly going through something you've practiced loads of times. And so you have to make sure you're working with the person and aware of what they're doing and how they're acting. And you certainly have an idea of where you're trying to go with something, what the end of the trick is, what point you're hoping to reach, but you never know quite what's going to happen along the way.
So the work that we've done about looking at the consultation as performance really made me think that there are all kinds of insights that people in one profession, in my case medicine, can gain from people in completely different areas of practice.
Mm.
A year or so ago, I know you took part in a symposium I organised at Imperial College London, where we brought together about 65 people from very, very different backgrounds to explore with one another what they actually do. And there we had scientists and clinicians and artists and performers. And an awful lot of people found that they had unexpected areas of similarity, whether they were restoring statues in the V&A Museum or whether they were manipulating tiny insects under the microscope or doing things in a chemistry laboratory. And I know that you do things that require great skill and delicacy and manipulation. But I know that you've got a science background as well yourself, haven't you? An engineering background.
Yeah,
and I wondered
bit, yes.
if that made sense to you as another point of sort of bridging.
I did a mechanical engineering degree to start with, and very much liked the world of magic and did magic tricks, but never really thought the two could cross over. And then it was only really afterwards that I started getting more interested in the magic world, did a PhD based on Victorian magic literature, and then started to find, actually, there's lots of interesting stuff where the two cross. And I rather wish there had been somebody saying, you know what, these things can inform each other.
Because although we talk about performing operations, we talk about performing experiments, I think, you know, people don't always follow that thought through. But when I started exploring whether these ideas I had noticed in my world of medicine might also play out in laboratory science, I discovered that there were all sorts of similarities there that I hadn't thought of. So, you know, people in chemistry laboratories having to work with very precise measurement and exact temperatures and mixtures of things and close observation, all those skills seem to me to be mirrored very closely by what happens in high-end chefs' kitchens. Mm. And interestingly, the symposium I mentioned has now led on to a collaboration, and we're going to be getting undergraduate chemistry students to spend time learning culinary techniques in a kitchen and getting culinary students to spend time in a chemistry laboratory to see whether each can learn from the other.
And of course, the wonderful thing about that, I suppose, is if I'm doing something which is about magic, I have a feeling of obligation to be good and to sort of know something about it and be able to do it to a certain extent. But if I'm spending time with somebody else, I've been working with a puppeteer, for example, recently, I have no expectation of being good at puppetry. And perhaps I can learn more because I'm not worried about proving myself in the same way.
And that's exactly the case with the Chemical Kitchen, as we're calling this project, which has been funded by Imperial College London as a way of helping chemistry students particularly to learn these techniques that these days they may not have learnt much or indeed at all at school. And this is a way of making sure that they gain those skills, exactly as you say, without them feeling embarrassed in front of a chemistry professor if they can't do a chemical experiment, because no one expects them to be able to make a good souffle or vice versa. And I think that particularly as the school curriculum is becoming scooped out and opportunities to perform and to do things with your hands are being systematically eliminated, I think it's getting more and more important that we give people the opportunities to make these connections with people they might not otherwise think of meeting. And so the collaboration that we've developed between magic and medicine seems to me to be an example of something that has a much wider set of implications.
Mm. And a particularly exciting one for me, because my PhD was looking at a man who wrote a book about how to do magic in the Victorian period, not because everyone should be magicians, but rather because he thought magic would teach people useful skills for the rest of their lives. And that's something which sort of took off a little bit then, faded away in the intervening 100, 120 years. And it's rather exciting to think that maybe the idea of using magic to help look at other things and examine other areas is there. And also, of course, that magic can become much richer by interacting with other areas, by finding out more about other things, and by using some of that in the way it develops.
That was Will Houston chatting with Roger Kneebone.